wrote this down because I'm at the moment trying to find the space between a word in English by finding words that I don't understand. So in our heavy arty text, it's very easy to find those words I don't understand. So I pick out the words I don't understand, and I don't look up the meaning of them in a dictionary, but I try and draw what that meaning might be for myself, which is a very subjective way of looking at it. But I bring in my associations. I might think about the sound of the word. I might think about onomatopoeia. It could be anything. Mm-hmm. But I'm also using my immediate environment to sort of form the drawing a little bit. So I might draw this, but then it starts to sprout hairs, depending on whether it sounds like a beast, a beasty kind of word.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more like the associations that the word has, rather than the actual meaning, the real meaning. Mm-hmm. So that's what I mean. But that's my position on this.
Mm-hmm.
That business about the Royal Festival of Horses, because I'm really struggling to find any evidence of anybody else disappearing down that gap in between pictures and words.
So you're starting from the point of words,
yes,
and creating pictures.
Yes.
Yes.
And I could reverse.
And I wonder if you started from pictures, or if you had an image in your mind that was neither a picture or a word yet.
Right.
Which point, where'd you start?
Mm-hmm. I mean, the thing with starting with a picture and turning into words, I suppose is what I'm getting at, is a kind of unpicking what meaning is in terms of a kind of text-based meaning. Whereas if you start with a picture, how are you going to start with a picture to start? Because surely, if you start with a picture, if I drew a picture of a pen, then I would write the word pen underneath it.
But synapazium peak comes to mind. Agree.
Yes, it does, doesn't it? I know, it does.
But if you treat a word as a picture...
Which is a kind of...
Yeah, maybe.
You know, it's just not a pipe, it's a...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all
semiotic
stuff.
Yeah,
semiotics.
So the word becomes a picture.
What?
But that thing about a word is it's not... The word is a picture.
Yes, it's already.
In the case of hieroglyphs in particular, things like that,
or
cave painting, there's a narrative that's embedded within the...
Well, that's the other one. That's why we're around, though, because that becomes a picture of the word.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So you got the. So you had to find out. So the difference is this thing about in between and dropping down the whole of the sentence. Is it neither word or picture?
Yes.
So in a way, you're exploring. So what then is the question?
What is not word, or what
is not picture?
What?
If you're falling down this hole forever.
Well, it is. I suppose it is a picture.
Yeah, that's,
well, you got the sense of image and the imagination. So is it to do with putting something a mark into the world, or is something inside our heads?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Which becomes a conversation.
Is it? So hang on. Let's put that. Can we rephrase that? So is it kind of the whole thing about it becoming actualized, or whether it's just in here?
Well, the actualization then manifests itself like a dream in many sorts of ways. So either it can come out through words in the mouth, or from an action of walking out a door, or falling into, literally falling into a hole. So it's like just that sense of, why do we make a mark in the first place?
Yes.
Why do we put a word down? Why do we put a cave painting up? And the question is, falling in the black hole, falling down the gap in between this, allows you to ask all these questions about images and the way we actually then position each other with our images, and position each other with our either photographing, for instance, when I photograph something, or when we write a word, I write a word about you. I can keep to myself and be secret about it and say, I've written about you.
Yeah.
Or I can show it to you and share it with you, and you can say, it's not me, but I can write a word about him, and we share it together, and we can talk about it. So it's that sense of where these words and pictures are going.
Anyone know if we actually see in pictures or words? I mean, when we look at it, does anyone know?
The idea comes before the word.
Yes.
So we would see an image first and then...
Well, we do, because language came out of experience and ideas. And
conceptually we position, we construct it. So there's no before or after.
So there may not be a difference between word and pictures.
No. It's the manifestation, it's the sacralization thing that's where we offer it to the other. And the other, we can share it with them, like here, and we both look at it. Or I can do it in some other way with you, which is more direct, which is what speech is about. So I think it's this thing about linguistics and the spoken.
Because it's quite specific, the word and the picture, as to which, like if you're in a tribe in God knows where, it's going to be different words and pictures. So I guess it's really specific to language and
Like the culture, your own culture.
It is. It's very subjective. Culturally specific.
Isn't language what differentiates us from animals, though? Animals, monkeys around the world speak the same language.
There's no language.
Or communicate in the same. It's the same language.
We call it a language.
Well, there is a language. We may not understand
it.
It's just something I heard on Radio 4. So I don't know. I don't know, but I.
We can say it's proven.
In one sense, we're animals, but our use of language, I believe, differentiates us from other animals. And the way that we use language as a tool.
Yeah, I'm a bit hesitant about that. How do you know?
It's a belief. It's a belief.
Well, yeah, but then it's not.
Okay.
You know,
it may be true. It may be true.
How can we prove anything? Just because the sound is slightly the same, it might be that it's accompanied
just
by.
Just because we haven't proved it,
a scent or something. It might completely change the meaning. But it's interesting what you said. What happens, I find, is if you think of a word, say, I don't know, it's really difficult to think of a word if you don't know what it means, but say, I didn't know what the word recalcitrant meant because I'm stupid. Anyway, recalcitrant. And I was thinking of the word recalcitrant, and then I was thinking about what your brain does when you think of a word and you don't know what it means. It doesn't think in text, does it? It thinks in images.
Wouldn't you break down the word into re?
You
know, you're doing
something like syllable.
You look for it.
Would try and work it out.
Sounds.
If you look for its genealogy,
And you, I remember, I was asking you some of your drawings that you put up on the wall. Did you break them down in syllables?
Yes, I did.
And you didn't.
No, I didn't.
I think that drawing or a picture is a compression. It can compress so much language into one visual. And we were talking about that the other day. As to sort of diagram, and everything falls under this rubric of drawing now, diagramming and whatever. And to put a diagram in front of somebody of a very complicated subject that would take hours to talk about, people get it. Like almost instantly. They can read a drawing because there's so much.
They're literate in that. I'm thinking of a map. Which is.
Anything, but picture you trying to describe how to get to a place on a map, for instance, on a road map, as opposed to just putting out the road map and saying, that's where we're going. It will take so many words to describe everything around that map, especially to say a topographical map.
Yeah, I think the word topography there is quite, for me, it describes quite a lot of what's going on.
Yeah.
And I'm also thinking of pictures not being illustrative or something, or diagrammatic or topological, but actually invoking some sense of emotion.
Yeah.
And I can think of paintings that do that abstractly without the use of text. Equally, I can think of paintings where comprised entirely of text or graphology.
Mm-hmm.
And I can think of paintings that combine both. I mean, one that springs to mind is a painting by John Walker that's got a kind of image that's vaguely a door, and it says, "In truth, in very, very truth, I am the door."
And say again, "I am the door."
It says, it's scrolled on this painting, is, "In truth, in very, very truth, I am the door."
Which the door.
The door, which is, I think, a reference to a chapter in the Bible for Matthew. And it's a kind of, John Walker, who's an English painter that lives in Massachusetts, I think, at the moment. he comes out of a particular kind of formal tradition, wanted to kind of give us, imbue an abstract of the physical nature of the painting with some kind of unseen presence and some kind of aura. Yeah. So that's a bit of a ramble around.
In between is the key
it's
word
kind
here.
Of in, it is, yeah. It?
It's kind of, in between, pitch the word. So it's referencing back to the in between bit as you're talking about
that. I think, yeah. That's, for me, is a very powerful image. You know?
It's thinking about the in between as you're talking about the picture. And then we got the word somewhere else, and then we got this something, which is this car, which is infinite, that's been the in between space. And it seems to me that you're talking about the in between.
Mm.
So it's trying to then think about, it's trying, because we're talking now, we're not writing something down in words, we're not taking pictures or drawing pictures, talking. Yeah. Mm. So in a way, talking is in between words and pictures.
Well, it's referred to as the place of hovering.
Is
where
it?
You can hover.
Yes.
That you don't go one place or the other place, you hover.
Yeah.
And it's also a very meditative space.
And I like hovering space.
Yeah.
Mm.
And Buddhists call it a meditation space, for sure.
Yeah. I was doing that yesterday on Hampstead Heath.
I'm sorry?
I was doing that yesterday on Hampstead Heath.
Oh. Meditate.
In between space, but now it's meditating. I didn't know. I said, this doesn't make any sense to me.
But
daydreaming, I think it was like. And I didn't even remember my daydreams.
Which is
good. Yeah. It was good. The feeling was like the daydreams went away.
Yeah.
It's concept of the yin and the yang, that it is a duality in a wholeness, I think is bullshit. Because the space you want to get to really is the space between the yin and the yang.
Yeah, I agree.
And
is it the corpus callosum?
I like the idea of hovering space.
Now you're introducing a word.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It's very specific.
Yeah, it's a left frontal lobe.
Whenever you say that, I just think of the lobes of the brain.
Yeah.
The yin and the yang and the bit in between. It's like, that's where they go apart.
In between words and pictures at the moment. Which one?
In between words and pictures. We need to draw objects into this, though.
I just wonder if we need to draw people into it.
Huh?
Do we need to draw people into it?
People and objects. Now, is
I think just by its very subjectivity, people are in there, aren't they? Because, I mean, the fact it's all about language and images, this is only relevant to people.
But
it won't be relevant to a dog.
But in our society, people have become objects. Because they become commodified in our society. In another society, we wouldn't be objects. We'd be subjects, because we'd know each other through conversation. But now we don't know each other because we're pictured, and we're objectified, we're put on spreadsheets, and we're stuck as pictures and papers that have nothing to do with us.
And then, when you're speaking about an image from a word, or a word from an image, you're being so subjective. Is there an object meaning of that in between space? Or is there a word, is there an object that exists?
Interpretation
without,
of that
without
space.
Without your subjectivity.
Without your subjectivity.
Yeah, because Allison is drawing.
Language is subjectivity.
Pardon me?
Is language subjectivity?
Yes,
I think so.
So it's without language.
You're a thing. That's why a psychotic is not a subject.
That's why
a psychotic is not a subject.
Without language.
Has language, but has a relation to language that excludes participation in symbolic language.
Yeah.
There's no metaphor. There's no... everything has to be concrete, real, yeah. Everything is seen as that. Yeah.
So that's why psychotics are excluded from society, you mean?
No, that would be society excluded.
Yeah. Yes, that's right.
You know, it kind of works the other way around. Right. You know, people yeah. who don't have that subjectivity
to fit into the system
are excluded. Yeah. They're not self-excluding. In fact, the psychotic's relation with language is one of the most interesting because it's always about language, about what is missed. In fact, one could say psychotic had a much closer, keener grasp of reality.
Because they wouldn't be able to reflect upon themselves.
No.
How do they reflect onto an object?
They are objects. I mean, working with autistic children, one of the things that you have to do all the time is put in limits. Because they're just falling in and out of their own, you know, there's no sense of their own bodies, own spatial distinction from the rest of the world. Yeah. So you really are having to put in objects. And they have to learn them.
Yeah, because touch is just, as we learned.
Yes, learning glass, learning a window.
Yeah, because then you're saying, that relates to me, but you have to keep remind yourself that relates to me.
Yes.
Yeah. So the language becomes a language of touch in that sense.
But you can use language to touch
to relate the two things together. Yes. Which that unpacking, the unpacking is interesting.
Alison, have you experimented with who speaks and where and when you're meeting the text? When you hear
who speaks?
Who's that lovely chef? Not Beaton, Meryl Streep later.
And Julia Child.
She speaks, because I imagine her words you would draw if she spoke. It's very, I can't do impression.
Okay.
But imagine if she spoke.
The sound of the word.
I think
that's where subjectivity comes in, because that would be my, I wouldn't necessarily break it down into syllables. Think about, like you were saying, that it's the personal emotional response that you might have to a word, rather than it being
it's not the meaning,
no.
The word, it may be the tone of the word.
The tone.
Or the stammering, or the failure of a word.
You're
the ambiguity
trying to feel
of
a word. You're trying to
feel a word.
Is it in Gulliver's Travels where he comes to a land where people have to carry objects in their pocket and that's their language?
Oh, wow.
They speak with objects.
Gulliver's Travels.
No,
I'm not sure if it's Gulliver's
Travels,
but what is it?
It's speak with objects in their pocket.
It's a journey.
It's a journey novel, and it's a strange land, and they have to carry impossible number of things around with them in order to have language.
Yeah.
And that's the same thing. I think I've told you about this new book by China Mieville.
You haven't told me that.
The science fiction. China Mieville.
Who's from Mieville?
MIEVILLE. Oh, God, it's something station? I don't know.
It was a
space. A planet. But the host creatures have no metaphor, have no metonym. For them, language is truth. So everything that's said
has to be,
has to be true.
Yeah.
And so they have to construct, to learn a new concept or to express it, they have to construct a new event.
Right.
They have to make a simile so they can say, it is like, and the one that runs through the book, it is like the girl who was hurt in the dark when she was made to eat something. And so they can say something by using that. And then they go mad with language because there are only some of the former terrestrians who can communicate with them. And even though they can sound the same, they're not true. So they learn forms of communication. And then there come two people. It has to be twins, and twins are bred in order to speak with them, because they have to have simultaneous meaning produced. Sorry, too much detail. I know. But these men come who are not twins, they're new ambassadors, and they drive them mad with language. They become, and the hosts become addicted. to the speeches of these new ambassadors, and it's finally broken by a construction of metaphor that separates them from their addiction, because language then no longer holds them.
I was trembling as I was reading it because it's so wonderful.
It does. I've got to get that. I've got to photocopy these. I can't go home without these pieces of paper now.
You're going to get them.
Will I get them?
So I was just thinking in the space between words and pictures, is, for me, is the is list. I mean, we talked about words being spoken.
Yeah.
There's the listening and I suppose interpreting, ascribing meaning to the transmission of sounds.
Yes.
So for me, I'm thinking about
music.
Listening. What is it? What's going on when one is decoding textual information, be it pictorial or linguistic?
That's when it becomes. This is reminds me of one of our drawing workshops when you think about the just not necessarily a you're not making an articulated sound. You might just be making a grunt or something before it even becomes a word. If you really want to pare it down.
A phoneme.
I was thinking of a grapheme, but that's wrong. It's a phoneme. It's sort of that's almost pre-language, isn't it? That's how perhaps language developed initially, perhaps, I don't know, with a whole assemblage of phonemes that just got stuck together eventually. But it's sort of that's the thing, is this the listening to that. And they don't have any meaning, do they? The only meaning they have, those phonemes, when they're just phonemes, is an emotional meaning. That the grunt is like, you get a feeling from that grunt.
But no word has any meaning either. You know, it's culturally...
Trust you to say that.
It's kind of accepted that a word will carry meaning. And this sort of phoneme sort of meets another phoneme, meets another word, becomes language. This is something you really
It's no meaning.
Curse.
It's not absolute meaning.
No, we accept that certain things mean certain things.
It just gets attached to the word. But in that sense, then, if we're talking about language developing from maybe phoneme or not, then we're talking about how we speak something out of our mouth before we write it down. And then that moment of putting a mark down, saying this mark is comes out of my mouth, but I'm going to put it down and offer it to you. So, in conjecture, because we don't know the history of the beginning language, do we? Can we begin to consider what the beginning language is like? Because let's think about the picture and word thing, about us speaking something out, about it, that person saying yes, or just whatever, good. And then that person then saying, somehow I'm going to put something down somewhere, which is the picturing of what comes out of the mouth going on. I'm just trying to get that point of the between point of the beginning about imagined
a word
beginning
or
language.
Or a sound is associated with a thing or an object, or a subject.
There has to be agreement between.
And then it's
a convention.
There has to be a guarantor. Yes.
I was just.
Well, we could try this.
I thought that you started off with what's interesting is that with that, too. I thought that's an agreeing sound. And no, it's not a cow. It's beyond an agreeable sound.
So what point did it become a cow?
When she remembered what she was taught cows said when she was little. But English cows go moo. French cows go meh.
Yes.
French cats.
That's the dialect.
Yes.
That's why French cows can never speak English. They don't get it.
But we still have to.
But the channel lines are in between those cows.
Kind of get the cow-like thing that we agree might be. We could call this. Yeah, and the mother gives the child language always.
Yeah.
Mother gives the child language. Or
Is it
takes
language?
A child out.
Yeah. Or is it...
This is you, this is milk, this is good, you are happy, this is sweet.
Well, and she's giving, even in the womb, though, isn't she? But that's just intonation at that point.
Now, this, my friend who...
But that's still language.
There's a shrink in Paris, works with prematurely born babies, and she does the night watches with them. And she talks to them when their mother and father are.
How does she talk to them?
She just sits with them and she talks and talks, and she says you have to talk to them all the time to keep them in this world. And it's language that will... So it actually makes me want to cry. When she's very passionate. She said it stops them slipping away. You hold them in the world with language.
Yeah.
And that's what she does. But that's that's her job. She goes, she's working with the mother and the father and the parents as well. But she's sitting and just talking.
But isn't that what you get in films at the end of someone's life, and you say, talk to them, keep them alive, by keeping talking to them. Get them talking to you. And that's how you keep them alive.
Language
stop them from
you
slipping
in the
into
world.
A coma.
At the end of life. And when people are in comas, you're meant to talk.
Yes,
talk,
exactly.
Talk.
Stimulate it, language.
So we have to keep talking all just to know we're alive.
Come on then, carry on.
I'm going to stop. I'm dead.
Someone
I'm hovering. I'm between.
A friend was in a coma following a car accident in California a few years ago, and it was to the point where it was decided that she had to be taken off life support. There was nothing there. My friend couldn't go, but she sent her son in her place. There were a small group of people there for this moment of departure. And they had her favourite wine, which her bitch's son had bought from Italy. Everyone was having a drink. And the doctor's nurse, the moment of unplugging. And then they just started to say, give us a sign, this is what's going to happen. Teresa, give us a sign. And a tear, this is absolutely true. You can read this, this is true. And she produced a tear. A tear just ran down her face. And the doctor said, I'm sorry, we can't turn off the life support machine.
And what happened? Did she come round?
She got some kind of no, there was nothing else. But a few weeks later, she developed pneumonia and died, which is what often wipes people out. But she produced
and now the people to know that she can hear
them. Who knows? But who wants to take the risk of that? You know, like Gabriel putting the shells on the grave. No, yes.
Yes. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you.
That's been exciting.
Where do you stay here?
I don't know.
You're yellow.
Are you yellow?
Yeah.
Can I check?
Am I next?
Something you called me
3:30.
I'm not sure why, though.
Did you call yourself?
Nothing.
Okay, well, that's probably best. I've got to go to black now.
Yes.
I'm just
staying. I want to stay here. I want someone else to come along.
Yeah.
I think I'll treat this as a serendipitous spot.
I'm sorry, your name?
I'm Tony.
Tony, I'm Rob.
Robert, hi. I like the I'm still with the hovering idea.
Yeah.
I thought I'd take that literally, just hover.
Yeah. It's very interesting, that space, though.
I tell you, when just that relating back to when you said that, because it reminded me of this thing of being on Hampstead Heath, on the hill.
On
Hampstead Heath, on the road here. And just being there by myself for a while. And allow myself not to do anything about it. And then realising that sense of it makes no sense. And that's okay. We seem to be living in a world that keeps on trying to make sense of everything. And it's, you're saying...
Yeah, it's not sense, it's not nonsense.
Give it a break sometimes, you know.
It's not conscious, it's not unconscious.
Yeah. But is that, we could pull the one on the lines down.
No, I just...
I should really make an effort. Do you know what's on here next?
Yes,
oh, okay. That kind of, that's all right. No, that's all the gesture I needed to be invited in an interesting way.
It's comfortable.
Actually, it dovetails from the last one, doesn't it?
Oh, really?
Interestingly.
Yeah. I love dovetails. I need the threads just to hold things together. Not to help them.
Who's watching who? Meeting or the viewer? I'm paraphrasing.
So are you at the university, at one of the universities?
Yeah, the three of us are.
Right. Hi.
Hi, Andy.
So there's a cabal here.
Okay.
Actually,
I am. Yeah.
Sorry. Who is this?
Yeah, no,
Okay.
Which one's this one?
You got the wrong one.
It's already used as 2 feet. It's already used as 2 feet. Do that song.
So it was Tony.
Tony Hall. H-A-L-L.
No, I'm
Rob Wilson.
Yes.
Good one. What's your last name?
Shall we begin? David.
David. Mm.